Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring. To the 2-minute round here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world. With me, I am Felipe Leon of FightNews.com, and with me, as always, is, well, not last time, but that was a special occasion, Mr. David Avila. How you doing, David?
Good, Felipe. How are you?
Good, good. As part of the show, I mean, on behalf of the show and the Leave It in the Ring Network, we want to wish you a belated happy birthday. We said it as part of the show couple of weeks ago when we had our last episode, but that's the reason you were here. It was your birthday and you were celebrating it, so we're glad you're back. And unfortunately, we do not have the heart and soul of the show, Elena Baby Doll Reed. She has a couple of upcoming things in her life, and she's taking care of those, but she will be back. She will be back soon enough to the 2-minute round. She's the one that keeps us going. And but this is episode number 24 of the 2-minute round, where we discuss all things female boxing here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. And before we move on to the fight results, we do have a special guest today. We have former, was she flyweight or junior flyweight?
Flyweight.
Former flyweight champion Cindy Amador of Southern California, more specifically of Riverside, and she's going to be joining us and talking about her career. She's retired. She's been retired for a couple of years, and now she has taken on a new endeavor within the sport of boxing, where she's going to be writing for theprizefighters.com, an all-female dedicated website. If you have not had a chance to check it out, please do so at theprizefighters.com. And if you guys want to call in and discuss female boxing with us, there's a lot of things to talk about. You can do so at 347-215-7598. Miss Cindy Amador, La Alacrana, the Scorpion Amador, will be calling us in about 15 minutes. And like always, we urge you to support us at patreon.com/leaveitintheRing with anything that you can help us with there on that website. With that, you would help the network, the Leave It in the Ring Network, which also gives us, you know, the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. The flagship show, Leave It in the Ring, with David Duenas. And then obviously this show, the 2-minute round. And you can help keep the network going at patreon.com/leaveitintheRing. So let's move on and give the fight results for the last couple weeks. It has not been as busy as we've seen in the last couple episodes, but there was some major fights all over the world, starting on Saturday, March the 18th. From Santa Fe, Argentina, Victoria Noelia Bustos scored a unanimous decision over Kimberly Connor and defended her IBF 135-pound title. Scores there were 99-91, 97-93, and much closer, 96-94. On Thursday, March 23rd, from the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, Golden Boy Promotions on ESPN, and the fight was broadcast on ESPN. Former bronze medalist, or not former, but actual bronze medalist in the 2012 London Olympics, Marlene Esparza, scored a unanimous decision over Rachel Sassoff in a four-rounder at flyweight. The scores there were 40-36 three times, and our very own David Avila was in the house along with Cindy Amador as well, and she's going to be joining us in about 10 minutes to discuss not only this fight, but other fights in the female boxing world. But David, give us your thoughts. You were there in-house. What did you see before the fight? How was the crowd anticipating this female fight card? A very important one, at least for the Golden Boy company, since this is the first female they've ever signed to an exclusive promotional contract. So give us your thoughts and what you thought of this whole fight and the whole event.
Well, they had a lot of pomp going for it, and She had a big crowd of supporters with her. And she also had a lot of people in the crowd that were really anticipating the fight. When they finally actually got to fight, it was kind of a letdown because the girl that she fought really wasn't even or even close to her caliber. So it was kind of like a sparring match. But the other girl, Rachel Sazov, she did her best. She's a strong-willed fighter. She's just not a boxer. She's more MMA fighter. And she took the fight because it was on TV, and she liked the fact that she was going to be fighting an Olympian. And she took a lot of gratification out of the fact that she was not knocked down or knocked out.
You know, after the fight, a lot of what was spoken about Rachel, obviously the biggest thing that was spoken about is that she looks about 11 years old when she's really 26. But also the fact that she was 1-8 as an MMA fighter and 0-2 as a boxer. So I agree with you, David. You know, there's been a lot of talk with other podcasts and people in the media that tend to believe that the talent pool in boxing, as far as female boxing, is not there yet, where we have quote-unquote journey women who will be willing to face a Marlene Esparza and teach her a thing or two as far as experience. But I don't necessarily agree with that. I believe that there is enough tough female fighters out there that obviously are not, you know, they don't have what it takes to perhaps be a world champion or a title challenger or to be in the upper echelon of the sport. But I think there is enough fighters out there that Marlene Esparza could have faced that would have, A, given a better fight, B, had more of the experience that she has, and C, would have been a bigger challenge. What do you think about the first part of my question as far as the talent pool and as far as journey women, quote unquote, and the fact that there are other fighters out there?
I agree with you. I think there's plenty of talent out there. In fact, I was actually speaking to several people about that, and I was telling them I could name six fighters in the California area alone that could probably beat her, and I'm not talking about world champions. And that's the kind of talent that exists here in California. They had to go wide and far to get somebody all the way from the East Coast who they felt they could knock out. Basically, that's what it looked like. It looked like they were trying to get somebody to knock out, but the girl would not go down. But there is plenty of talent. There's a lot of female talent out there. There's even German women of journey women status that they could have given her easily four hard rounds. They chose the easy route. Maybe it's just a one-time-only choice. Hopefully in the future they go after someone to give them some kind of a competition.
And, you know, and we've seen it in the past. I mean, I don't want to come off, and I don't want us to come off as being too harsh on Marlene Esparza because,
true,
you know, it's her pro debut. She's out with a major promoter. But we have seen two former Olympians make their pro debuts in the last 6 to 7 months, and they have been matched up against much tougher opposition, and they have given much better fights and much tougher fights, speaking to Clarissa Shields and Katie Taylor. So the fact is that it's not like we haven't seen it before. It's not like we're saying something that nobody's doing, because it's happening right now. So the other complaint that a lot of people had regarding this fight is that it was on one of the biggest platforms that female boxing has at this point, which was ESPN, and that Golden Boy should have had the responsibility to put on a better fight for the sake of female boxing. Do you agree or disagree, David?
I definitely agree. I think they were allowing her to pick and choose her own opponent, and by doing so, she picked the absolute most mediocre opponent she could find. instead of picking anybody who could even give, who even knew how to throw a jab. And it was just one of those things that I think, I hopefully they learned. Hopefully Golden Boy learned. You can't do that because they're basically wasting time and money, and you're going to lose fans' interest. Because it's all about entertainment, and that wasn't entertaining.
And one thing that we also discussed between you and I, but not on the air, was that, you know, to a certain extent, we have to applaud Golden Boy because they have kind of dipped their toe into the female boxing world, you know, with Marisela Cornejo and Cines Estrada, who I hear is going to fight again at the Velasco Theater in April. No opponent has been announced for Cines Estrada for that fight, but obviously as we get closer, we should be able to hear some news about that. They have touched their toe into the female boxing pool, but in the same manner as this fight with Marlene Esparza, it was criticized, at least that Marisela Cornejo fight, when she ended up fighting Lisa Olsen, who was a fighter that was nearly 40 years old, and she had not fought in nearly, I think, around 10 years. And she was fighting two or three weight classes over her natural weight. So, not a competitive fight, you know, at the Velasco Theater and televised on Estrella TV and Ring TV. So, it's not the first time that Golden Boy has been involved in this type of fight where it's a female fight, a female bout, and is not that competitive. The one that turned out to be a little bit competitive, and just because she got dropped, was the Cines Estrada against Mandy, what was the last name? Mandy Fuentes fight.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully, hopefully Golden Boy, you know, kind of takes a step back and maybe thinks about it. I don't know if they, if they've, you know, seen the criticism that this bout has received. I think that they have been focused for such a long time and only on male boxing that they might not have somebody in house that may know the female boxing world and the opponents and the fighters out there a little bit better than their normal matchmakers. And like you mentioned, David, and I think it's a big mistake, that when you let the actual team, the A-side team, this case, Marcela, Marlene Esparza or Marisela Cornejo or Cines Estrada, for their team to pick the opponent, then you're not going to have a competitive fight.
Exactly. They're going to pick the worst they can. They're going to, the easiest.
Well, they're going to pick the easiest one that the commission and TV is going to accept. And TV, I think at this point, at least they're going with whatever Golden Boy tells them.
Yeah, they should take a lesson from Mexico and just the best fight the best. That's what it's all about. People want to see good fights. They don't want to see one-sided fights.
Well,
they don't want to see somebody showing up. They just want to see a good fight.
Yeah. I think that to a certain extent, you got to let them develop Marlene Esparza, but I don't think this was much of a development fight for her, especially with her type of experience. I mean, she's not a girl that just started boxing. She's been boxing for over 10 years, and she's boxed at the highest amateur level there is, which is the Olympics. So it's not like there's somebody that needs to learn on the job. She's 28 years old. She's learned. She knows what she knows. She already knows what she knows about boxing. She just has to switch her style to a more professional style. But as far as, like, having her develop, there's no more developing of Marlene Esparza.
Yeah, exactly. There's no time. She's already 20. She's going to be 28 in July. There's no time to develop. I mean, her prime is now.
Yeah.
So why waste time? Just go after that title now.
Exactly. So, go ahead.
Take the road of Lomachenko. Just go for the title.
And the road of Clarissa Shields, who is basically calling out the WBC champion, Christina Hammer. She wants her this year. And this year, she's only going to have three or four, you know, one or two or three more fights, which is going to make her like 5-0. So same thing with Clarissa Shields. Clarissa Shields, two-time gold medalist. She has a lot of experience. Only one loss as an Olympian. I mean, as an amateur. So she knows she has the experience to get to the mountaintop. And we should expect the same from Marlene Esparza. Moving on to Friday, March the 24th in San Juan, Argentina, Leonela Paola Yurica scored a unanimous decision over Venezuelan Carolina Alvarez and a 10-rounder to defend her IBF flyweight title. Scores, Alvarez was down in the sixth round, and the scores there were 99-90 two times and 98-91. On Saturday, March 25th, from Campeche, Mexico, we saw the return of a fighter who some time ago had a little bit of a she was starting to make a little bit of a name for herself, and she decided to go to MMA like we've seen some other fighters do. Biggest name probably Holly Holm, and now she's back into boxing, which is Anna Houlton, who at the time was being touted as the female Manny Pacquiao. She went down to Mexico and she fought Maria Jose Nunez in an 8-rounder at featherweight. And you mentioned to me, BoxRec has not put up the result, but you did mention, David, that she won the fight.
Yes, she did win the fight. I got a call from her trainer, manager, and informed me that she did win. Yes, Angela
did,
Reyes.
Angela, did she win via unanimous decision or knockout?
I can't recall. Let me see. I could pick it up right away. But I know she did win the fight, and he said that she's back, and she does want to be. She's going to be fighting in the featherweight division. That's what I was.
Okay. Well, you know, I want to come back and talk about Anna Houlton a little bit more, because I know that you have seen her fight before. She's been around the L.A. area, which is your territory there. But with us on the line is none other than our special guest, former flyweight champion, and now new writer for the PriceFighters.com, Miss Cindy Amador. Let me patch her in real quick. Hello, Cindy. How are you doing tonight?
Hello, everyone. I'm great. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you for joining us here on the two-minute round. You know, before we move on, why don't you tell us your credentials? You were a flyweight champion for which organization?
For the IFBA, International Female Women's Association.
And you ended up winning that title. Is that it was? I think it was vacant, and you ended up beating Jolene Blackshear for it, right?
No, it was after I fought Jolene. It was against Amaris Quintana.
Ah, Amaris Quintana, yes. Okay. Well, David, here we go. We have Cindy Amador. I'm going to pass on to the baton to you, and then I'll take over.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Hi, David. I'm great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so what I wanted to talk to you about, well, first, for Felipe did talk about credentials. For those people that never saw Cindy, she was a very, she was a pressure fighter.
Mm-hmm.
She fought many, many top females in the light flyweight and flyweight division. In fact, until she got injured, she was about to face Ava Knight. And that tells you the type of fighter that Cindy Amador was, that she was willing to fight Ava Knight. She had no hesitation about that, but then injury forced her to retire. And tell us about that, Cindy. How did that happen?
Well, I was getting ready for that fight with Ava Knight, and I was ready. I was very excited because I was moving on division. I was already on weight. I was on 113, like that was my regular weight. And so I was, you know, two weeks away from the fight. It was going to be the biggest fight of my life because it was supposed to be televised in ESPN, and it was a great challenge for me to face one of the best female women in the game, I think. And I was ready, and 2 weeks before, I started, you know, having problems with my vision, and they have to take me to the hospital by emergency, and, yeah, they have to do, like, surgery immediately. And that's when they told me I wasn't able to fight anymore because I was lucky to save my eye. Yeah.
So how are you doing now, Cindy? Are you able to see out of that eye?
I'm happy now. I'm just, you know, that's how life is, and it was a hard process, but like life goes on, and you have to take everything how it comes, and now I feel, you know, blessed that I, you know, had the chance to do what I did, and you know, I'm happy with it. Yeah.
And recently you started writing for the PriceFighters.com, and you were at the fight where Marlon Esparza fought Rachel Seza. Oh, what was your opinion of the fight?
I was disappointed because Marlene, she's a great fighter, and she has an amazing career, and I think we were, you know, expecting a better fight, a better opponent, and the opponent that she had, it was not enough, not even to be, you know, in a fight like that. In my opinion, it's sad because we were expecting a better opponent for Marlene, and I was just disappointed. Yeah.
What did you think, Felipe?
Hello, Cindy. Well, just to give a little bit further into Cindy's career, I completely agree with you. I seen her fight, and she's a tough fighter, always going forward, throwing a lot of punches, never taking a step back, which obviously makes for a great fight. Unfortunately, might be a reason of why she can't fight anymore, because, you know, she took that injury to the eye. But just to go a little bit over her career, she fought Mayela Perez, who her record is not the greatest record, but I've seen her fight a couple of times. And right now she's a WBF strawweight champion, I believe. Or she's an Adam fight. She just won the title. She won like the 102-pound WBF title, Mayela Perez. And actually, she also fight a local fighter here from Tijuana named Kenny Enriquez. And Kenny has told me plenty of times that that's the toughest fight she's ever had against Mayela Perez. And Cindy beat her in her, I think it was her fifth fight. Then she fought Gloria Salas, another Southern California tough fighter. She fought Amaris Quintana, who's ranked in the top 10 right now, and beat her twice. She fought a highly touted, very experienced Karina Moreno, and beat her. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Damn it, take over for a bit. Yeah. So you and then you fought Maria Suarez. Maria, how was it fighting somebody that tall? She was much taller than you, Cindy.
Yeah. Well, I was used to fight taller girls because, you know, I'm the shortest boxer in the history. I'm very 5 foot, so every opponent was taller than me. So to me, it was actually easy to fight like a way taller opponent than me than you know, when I fought Mayela, it was a tough fight, and because we were almost the same height. So we have almost the same style and the same, you know, reach, and everything is, you know, similar. So to me, I don't know, I had easy way to get inside a taller fighter than a fighter that is, you know, my height.
Why is it easier to fight someone taller? I'm curious.
I guess because I believe I was faster, and I was always coming forward. So I can bob and weave between, you know, their jabs and their straight punches. And suddenly I was, you know, in my zone, like in my reach, fighting inside.
Oh, okay. And then you got some tough fights, too, against smaller girls, like Jolene Blackshear, who's a very good fighter.
Yes.
A very good fighter, too. Are you back, Felipe?
Yeah, sorry.
You okay?
My throat just closed up. Sorry. Yeah, it was weird. Anyways, like I was saying, she beat a Karina Moreno, who at the time was 22-3. And then also, like I mentioned, Amariz Quintana twice. She defeated her. And then she took she beat Maria Suarez, who at the time was undefeated and also highly ranked. Her only loss was a split decision against a very, very tough Jolene Blackshear, which was actually considered the fight of the year in 2013. So, Cindy, yeah, after all these fights that I just mentioned, which one are you the most proud of? Which one do you, after the fight, you walked away and said, you know, that's my best fight I've ever had?
Wow. It's hard to tell because, to me, every single fight was the only one and it was the best. Because you never know. I never underestimate any of my opponents. Every fight, to me, was, you know, the best. And I always was dedicated, and every fight has something, you know. Every single fight, my first fight because it was my debut, my second fight because I it was, you know, something different with somebody that was way more experienced than I am and taller. Of course, it was against Katrina...
De la Cruz.
De la Cruz, yes. Yes, she came like way too over on the weight. They barely, I was underweight and she came over. So we have to, you know, fight before the fight actually happened because they wanted to cancel the fight. And I had so many people, you know, come to see me, and I'm glad that happened. And I'm glad that I beat her. That fight was amazing because it was the first fight that I had with my trainer, Ruben Castañón, because I started my career with Juan West, and they were supposed to be a team, Juan West and Ruben Castañón. And for my second fight, Juan West decided to leave, you know, to leave me, and I moved on with Ruben Castañón. So I remember that we fought at the Pachanga, and he told me that he will make me a world champion in 3 years. And 3 years later, I fought Amaris Quintana at the same place for the world title, and I became a world champion. So I just remember that, and it was like magic. Yeah, it was amazing.
Now, you have not been in the ring for 3 years, but obviously you followed the sport, and now you're going to do so even at a different level with writing for theprizefighters.com. So since your retirement, who are some of the female fighters that you've watched that you like their style and who you might say, I'm going to follow this fighter, I really like the way they fight, and I want to see what they could do in this sport?
Well, I will say, like, my favorite fighter is, I always follow Mariana Juarez. She was one of my inspirations since I met her. I think she's one of the best fighters. And Jackie Nava, I think she's another one that I always enjoy watching her fight.
Now, the upcoming fighters, you know, like Clarissa Shields and Katie Taylor and all these fighters that are coming up, what is your thoughts about them? And who do you see as one that could potentially become a great?
I think Clarissa, she has, like, everything to be one of the best because for her experience and for, you know, the weight division that she's at. And I think she has all the potential to do something amazing in this boxing career.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in. David, do you have anything else?
There's some fights coming up. In fact, Mariana Juarez is fighting this week against Catherine Feedy for the bantamweight title. Are you looking forward to that fight,
Yes, I am. I am. And I believe in Mariana Juarez because even she has a lot of fights, I don't know, to me she has something special, and I believe that she can beat anyone when she's well prepared, yes.
Yeah, she's a special fighter. She's in her 30s now, but she's still doing it.
Yes. I'm agreeing.
Are you involved in the sport at all? Are you training or do you still go to the gym or do you go to the? I know that you go to like to a lot of events, but other than that, are you involved in any other way in the sport?
Well, I do boxing in just special occasions when people want me to train. I do personal, you know, classes one by one at the gym that I used to train, Capital Punishment out of Riverside. And I just, you know, I still working out just to, you know, stay, you know, in shape. Obviously not like before, but, you know, I like to work out. And yes, I still supporting, you know, my gym. Actually, we have a fundraiser this Saturday because they are trying to close the gym, and I'll be attending there with some other champions, former champions, and yeah, supporting, you know, my manager, that he's the owner of the gym, and supporting, you know, the fighters and the and everyone that is involved in boxing.
Okay. Well, thank you, Cindy, for calling in. We appreciate your time. And you know you have a home here at the 2-Minute Round. And as well, we'll be colleagues on theprizefighters.com. So on behalf of the show, we want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me there. My pleasure.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, David. I see you soon. Have a
see
great night,
soon.
Guys.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
And there you have it, folks. Former International Female Boxing Association light flyweight champion Cindy Amador was with us here on the 2-Minute Round, and she just joins a very elite and prestige group of female fighters that have been on the show here with us, and we want to thank her excuse me, for being with us. So we're going to move on to going back to Ana Juliton, David, you know, she was tutored for a long time being, you know, the female Manny Pacquiao, obviously because she is of Filipino descent. She's from San Francisco, from the Bay Area. But, you know, I remember that she was always looking for a big fight. She was looking for, like, something against Jackie Nava or one of the big Mexican names back about 3-4 years ago, and it didn't materialize. And then after that, she ended up making the jump to MMA. But now she's back. She actually made a little bit of a comeback last year in August, where she fought Carla Valenzuela in Yucatan, but it was a draw in a 6-rounder. But now she has come back and won in Campeche, Mexico, in an 8-rounder not too long ago, last week, I believe, on March 25th. So can you tell me about Juliton as far as what you've seen her do inside the ring, and what do you think she could still give the boxing world?
Well, the one thing about Ana is she is a veteran. She's 36 years old, but she's not an old 36. She's one of these fighters that is always in shape. I've never seen her out of shape. She's lost some fights, but she's never been humiliated or anything. She's always, you know, competitive. Even in her losses, she was competitive. And people forget she won multiple titles. So I think she's capable of doing some damage, and I think she's come back at the right time. She ventured into MMA, but that's so different. That's such a different sport. I think she's better off in boxing. I think that's really her sport.
And she's coming back in the featherweight, you mentioned. which is a competitive weight class, which has a lot of good names there. You know, obviously there's Jelena Miranovic, which, you know, I believe is the cream of the crop. Now that Amanda Serrano has moved up to super bantamweight, and she might even be moving down even further. Well, not might, she is. She's actually training for that. You know, you have Jennifer Hahn. You have Soledad Matisse, if we ever see her come back in the ring. We have Cindy Serrano, Amanda's sister, who is a WBO champion. So there's a lot of names there that she could kind of mix it up with and make some interesting fights. So, you know, go ahead.
I know that I heard from Amanda Serrano's promoter that she was offered a fight against Amanda, but she wasn't ready because she was coming out of MMA, and that's a whole different ball game to get ready from MMA to boxing, and then you're going to face one of the top two or three pound-for-pound fighters in the world.
Yeah.
I don't think she should take that fight either, but not then. But now she's back in the game. She's a world title contender. She definitely is. If she has any of the skills she had before.
Yeah.
She should be fighting world champions.
And hopefully we get to see her on this side of the border soon, because she's been fighting down in Mexico quite often. Well, not often, but, you know, almost all her fights have been down in Mexico as they build her up. You know, the last time that she fought in the United States was back in 2011.
Wow, I didn't
know. Yeah, when she fought Angel Gladney. But then since then, she's fought in Mexico like six times and in Argentina once since 2011. So she's being built up in Mexico. So we'll see. She has a promoter. I saw an interview with her recently, and she named the promoter, but I don't remember who it was. So they're
in Canada.
Okay, so he's investing some money and trying to build her up. So let's see what's next for her as far as if she needs a couple more fights down there to get ready for something a little bit bigger. Now, that was on Saturday, March 25th, where Ana Juletón defeated Maria Jose Nunez in Mexico. And the same night, but from Ciudad Juarez, and this was televised on Televisa in Mexico, Lourdes La Pequeña Lourdes Juarez, Mariana's sister, scored a unanimous decision against Karina Fernandez in a 10-rounder at flyweight with scores of 190, 98, 92 twice. Juarez, or Lourdes, has gone on record to say that she's actively looking for a world title opportunity, that she's ready. She already has more than 20 fights with a couple of losses, and that she's ready for a world title opportunity. At first, about a month ago, it had been reported that she was challenging the WBC super flyweight champion Solina La Loba Muñoz, but I think they had reconsidered that challenge because La Loba Muñoz, no secret to anybody, she's one of the most solid Mexican champions out there right now. So for La Pequeña Lulu to beat her, although somewhat of a good fighter, maybe not at the level of Loba Muñoz. So I think they have reconsidered, because this fight was actually battled, her last fight against Karina Fernandez, at flyweight. So maybe that's something good for her, that she goes down to flyweight if she can. And it seems like she can, because she made the weight easily. I think she came in a little bit lower than flyweight. And maybe going after one of the champions there might be something more worthwhile for her. Although it's still kind of tough, because the WBC champ, at least for right now until the end of that tournament, is Jessica La Kika Chavez, who is no walk in the park for anybody, David.
Oh, I think she is one of the top fighters pound for pound in the world. She's very good, very, very good.
Yeah, so for Pequeña Lulu to have her sights on her, it's a little bit tough. Now, the other fighter, I think the IBF champion is a Japanese woman. And the WBO, I believe, is that young woman of Filipino descent from Australia. So I don't know who is out there at flyweight that Pequeña Lulu could actually match up against.
Yeah, one thing, though, she has gotten better. I mean, her last two, three fights, she's really, really come on. I mean, she won by knockout in the previous fight, and she beat this girl in her hometown, which I think is a big thing. She beat a hometown fighter, and by a wide decision, she must have really put it over on her.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you there, but also – her promoter, Promociones del Pueblo, are they're based out of that city. So although the other fighter was a hometown fighter, they're based out of that city. I'm sorry. The flyweight champion for the IBF is Leonela Judica of Argentina, who actually just defended her title against Carolina Alvarez. So that's not so – yeah, so that's a fight that's doable if – If and I'm sure Promociones del Pueblo have enough in their bank account to maybe make it enticing for the Argentinian to come to Mexico. I don't see them sending Pequeña Lulu out there to fight. So we would have to see if they give her the opportunity, but I would find it hard for them to send her out there to challenge the Argentinian. Now, as far as at flyweight, the flyweight WBO champion is Nana Yoshikawa, so that might be a possibility as well, bringing a Japanese fighter over here. Obviously, we've seen it wouldn't be the first time we see a Japanese female fighter in Mexico defending her title, which the other one that just lost the IBF title, which was, I'll tell you right now. Oh, no, that's not it. Give me 1 second here. Naoko Shibata came to Mexico and lost her title against Alondra Garcia. So it wouldn't be the first time. Now, let me ask you this, David, you that have contact with our Japanese correspondent for the prizefighters.com, how's female paid out there in Japan? Are they paid, fairly well? Have you spoken to her about that?
She said that they're not paid as well as the men. They're still fighting the same battle that women are fighting over here to get, pay on equal grounds as the men. They're not there, but they have a good movement. And just like Mexico, female boxing is really picking up over there. Even though their main promoter, Mr. Onda, doesn't really particularly like female boxing, their other promoters are jumping on it, and they're providing a platform for female boxing. As you saw last week, they had an all-female bout, a fight card with about 8 bouts, and it was a big hit.
Yeah. And just to round it out with the WBA, flyweight champion is vacant. So that might be something that they could look into for La Pequeña Lulu. So there are opportunities out there for La Pequeña Lulu to become a world champion, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the WBC route, although her sister has been very loyal to the WBC, Mariana Juarez. So I don't know if she would suggest to her sister that she should look elsewhere for that title. But what might make her look elsewhere will be the thought of facing Jessica Kika Chavez.
Yes, that would be a tremendous, tremendous match.
Yeah. The same night on Saturday, March 25th, but the Manchester Arena on the undercard of Jorge Linares against Anthony Crolla, we saw yet again Katie Taylor scoring the unanimous decision over this time Milena Koleva in an 8-rounder, her first 8-rounder. At 135 pounds, the scores were a lopsided 80 to 72 three times. So this is Katie Taylor's fourth fight as a professional, and her first as a in an eight rounder. And if there is a way to develop a female fighter with the credentials of a former Olympian, it's the way Katie Taylor has been developed. She went pro on November 26th of last year in a six-rounder. She fought again on December 10th in a six-rounder. She then came back, took a couple months off, and came back in March 4th in a six-rounder. And now she fought again a couple weeks later in an eight-rounder. So she's being, and now she's scheduled to fight again on April 29th on the undercard of Anthony Joshua against Vladimir Klitschko, against a yet-to-be-determined opponent. So this is the way to develop an Olympic-level amateur, now professional. Don't you agree, David?
Absolutely. She's a tremendous fighter. Tremendous. If anybody, if you get the opportunity to look her up on YouTube, just watch her. I mean, she has super hand speed, and she's accurate, aggressive. She knows what she's doing, and she's not going there to pity pat.
Her footwork is
very
amazing.
Very, very good fighter.
Yes, a great fighter. And as I said it here, and I've said it on another podcast that I'm a part of, she's my favorite prospect, male or female, right now. I mean, there's no other fighter that I want to watch more than Katie Taylor. And another point, like you mentioned, the fact that Marlene Esparza is 28 years old, Katie Taylor's 30 years old. So they are bringing her up fairly quickly because she is a 30-year-old fighter. Now,
right.
She's not fighting the world's best, but she's fighting much more experienced fighters that have seen a lot more professional boxing than her, and she's fighting them and beating them and looking spectacular doing it. Her first opponent in her pro debut was Karina Kopinska. Obviously, nobody's heard of her, but she was 7-14 at the time that she faced Katie Taylor. Viviane Ovanov was her second opponent. She was 9-1. Her third opponent was Monica Gentili, who was 6-6.
Well, stop right there. Stop right there.
Okay.
Viviane Ovanov just won a title this weekend.
Well,
that's
there you go.
How good an opponent she was.
And she ended up defeating her. She dropped her in the second round and beat her via unanimous decision. Viviane Ovanov, who just won a title. And then her next fight against Monica Gentili, she stopped her in five. And then she just beat a 9-7 fighter against Milena Koleva in an eight-rounder. So if you're going to come and tell me that there isn't these type of fighters, 6-6, 7-14, 9-7, in the flyweight division, or even in the junior flyweight division, that you could, you know, bring up to the flyweight division to face Marlene Esparza, then I don't think you know enough about female boxing. So Katie Taylor scheduled again for April 29th, and I just can't wait to see who she's going to be facing, and I'm sure she's going to be challenging for a world title, if not by the end of this year, by early next year. And just to go over who are the current world champions in that division at lightweight, the IBF has Victoria Bustos out of Argentina, who just defended her title these last couple of weeks. The WBO is Joanna Belén Alfonso, another Argentinian at lightweight. The WBA is WBA is Cecilia Comunales from Uruguay, who actually, you know who her promoter is, David? Is Samson Lekwitz.
Samson?
Samson Lekwitz. And in the WBC, the flyweight the lightweight champion is none other than, give me 1 second here.
Delphine Persoon.
Oh, that's a tough fight. That's a good fight right there. Let me just double check
that's
that.
That's a very good fight.
Yeah, Delphine Persoon from Belgium, who was close to retiring. I remember speaking about it a couple episodes ago. We mentioned it here that she had some type of hand issue, remember?
Right, exactly. Some kind of medical problem. It's a great fight. Very, very
great
good fight.
Great fighter. Great fighter.
She beat Erica Farias, who is going to be fighting Cecilia Breakers.
Yes, that is right. She's going to be fighting Cecilia Brickhouse fairly soon here. And lastly, in our fight results from the UDC Physical Activity Center in the District of Columbia, D.C., Franchon Cruz scored a first-round TKO over Latasha Burden in a Schedule 4 rounder at the 160-pound weight limit, and the time there was 29 seconds. So after losing her pro debut against Clarissa Shields, this Franchon Cruz, who is an amateur standard of her own right, proved that, you know, she's ready for big things, maybe not Clarissa Shields, but pretty big things, because she beat Tyrosh Latasha Burden, who was no slouch. You know, she's 4-9. So here we go, Franchon Cruz coming into the ring as 0-1, and she's fighting a 4-8 fighter, and she stops her in the first round. It took Raquel Miller, another highly touted amateur, 3 rounds to stop her. It took Alicia Napoleon 8 rounds to stop her. And she went 10 rounds with Maricela Cornejo, this Latasha Burden. So for Franchon Cruz to go in here and just basically blow her out in 29 seconds really says something about not only Franchon Cruz, but Clarissa Shields.
Yeah, absolutely. When I first saw her fight in person with Clarissa Shields, immediately you could tell that both girls were way above the regular level. I mean, they were fighting on a level that hasn't been seen in that weight class since Leila Ali. I mean, they were very skilled fighters and very fast and very powerful.
Okay, so it looks like we have somebody on the line. Let's see if they want to talk to us real quick. 5110, you're live on the air on the 2-minute round. Oh, he ended up dropping. He didn't want to talk to us. Don't be shy, people. Give us a call, 347-215-7598. You can discuss female boxing here with myself, Felipe León of FightNews.com, and the legendary David Avila from TheSweetScience.com, ThePriceFighters.com, and a bunch of other,
newspapers.
Newspapers. You know, David, just to go off topic a little bit, because it just reminded me, just going down your credentials, I would never have thought when I was a kid, a teenager, and I would watch the, those shows that HBO puts together before a pay-per-view fight, that they talk about the fight and they interview a bunch of journalists, and they were doing them right before the Oscar De La Hoya's pay-per-views, and I would see you there, and you would give your opinion of Oscar De La Hoya, because obviously you've been covering Oscar. You're originally from East L.A. You're based out of Riverside, California now, but originally you're from East L.A. You're a Los Angelino through and through, UCLA grad, Dodger fan, although I'm not going to hold that against you. So I would never have thought that I would be sharing a podcast with you. So you know your boxing. You know your female boxing. If you guys don't know who David Avila is, I urge you to do a little bit of research, and you know who this man is within the world of boxing. So,
I'm an
David, David, to go back a little bit, since you weren't with us on our episode number 23, give us your thoughts about Clarissa Shields' NABF world title fight over Silvia Sabatos. I'm sure you watched it as it went down. So what were your thoughts as you were watching the fight, and what do you think could be next for her?
Well, she definitely needed to somebody like that. This girl was very, very tough. People might be confused because it was so one-sided, but this girl that she fought was actually a very tough girl. She could fight, but Clarissa is just such an overpowering athlete. I mean, she has it all. She's got speed, power. She knows what she's doing. And the one thing I saw in this fight is that she was learning how to set up her stuff. She was setting up punches now. She wasn't just flailing, trying to blow this girl out. She was actually trying to set her up, and I saw it, and I was like, wow, Clarissa is improving in by gigantic leaps. And I'm really impressed with her. I think she will be fighting for a world title. by this year. I think against Christina Hammer, I think she beats her. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks that, but I think she beats her because Christina Hammer, as good as she is, she's almost a prototype of all the fighters from Eastern Europe. And those are girls that Clarissa has been fighting since she was an amateur.
Mm.
And I think she has a really good chance to just take that title away from her this year.
Now, do you think that it's sooner than later that that's the way to go with Clarissa Shields and that world title?
I think it is because basically she grabbed the NABF title, which is the first leg to getting the world title. And when you want to be on television, especially something like Showtime, they want that title. They want to be able to say she's fighting for a world title, because that's going to bring the audience. That's going to bring another wave of people. And so she needs that title to get the big money, the big draw, and the big numbers. And so she knows that, and she's very confident. And I think that it has to happen this year. Not that she should be in a hurry, but that's just the kind of fighter she is. She wants the best. She wants the best always.
Mm-hmm. But the only thing that worries me about that is that then what happens next? She beats Christina Hammer. She becomes the world champion. Then who does she face next that can make a name for herself, that would make it seem, that can get us excited about seeing her fight? I mean, I'm just looking right now at the WBC rankings, and there's only 6 women rated as of February 2017. Obviously, she's not rated yet because her fight happened on March 10th. But we have Callie Reese as number 1 with Christina Hammer being the champion. We have Maria Lindberg rated number 2, who's going to be fighting Christina Hammer, and we're going to go over that in a couple of minutes. Then we have Kelly Morgan of the UK, who's the silver champion. We have Gifty Amanua Ankra of Ghana. We have Rita Murwebi of South Africa. And then we have Raquel Miller, who is from the Bay Area of California, who's about 3-0 right now. And who there is some bad blood between Clarissa Shields and Raquel Miller. But for Raquel Miller to be ready to challenge Clarissa Shields in the professional ranks, I think she needs a little bit more seasoning. So of all those fighters that I just mentioned, you know, maybe Kelly Morgan might be a good name that she can face in the future that could get us excited once she becomes the world champion.
Well, one of the names that I've heard mentioned the weight disparity is a lot, but I've spoken to this fighter, and the name I'm going to mention is Layla McCarter. She was offered the fight.
Wow.
And
it's a
fight that, yeah.
Wow.
And Layla likes the idea, but she wants her to have the title. So
wow.
If she has the title, we fight on Showtime, I'll do it.
Why don't we call Layla McCarter and see if she wants to get in the ring with King Kong, because it looks like she would actually consider it.
Layla can fight. She is, in my opinion, the best pound-for-pound fighter.
Wow. You know, now let's say Clarissa Shields wins the middleweight title this year, and she defends it a couple times, and then decides to move up to super middleweight. Now, the champion there for the WBC is Nikki Adler. But then the rated fighters there are Zita Satiko of Hungary, Tori Nelson of the USA, Maricela Cornejo. Actually, Clarissa Shields is actually ranked number 5 as a super middleweight by the WBC. And then we have Franchon Cruz at number 7, who I wouldn't shake a stick at in a rematch between them once Cruz gets a little bit more experience and more wins. And then ranked number 10, believe it or not, is Elisa Olsen at super middleweight by the WBC. As far as IBF at middleweight, we have nobody, and there's no champion. And at super middleweight, we have nobody as well. So you know, that's the only thing that worries me about Clarissa Shields going fairly quickly for that WBC title and or WBO, which Christina Hammer has, is that then what happens next? Who are we going to be excited to see her? I'd rather see her fight all these fighters that I mentioned beforehand, beating them, mm-hmm. getting to about 7 or 8-0, 10-0, and then going after Christina Hammer, because to me, as a boxing fan, makes that fight even more exciting.
That's an interesting perspective.
You know, just to see her fight more, and because I wouldn't want her to become the world champion, and then I'm going to be like, well, what now? Who's she going to fight? What's going to be the challenge? She's going to blow out all these other fighters, so what's the point? You know, I kind of see it that way.
Well, one thing I know is that there's always somebody comes along. Always somebody new comes along.
You have,
that's one thing
that's
I've
true,
seen
that's
in,
true.
In the years that I've been covering boxing. Everybody says, oh, what's going to happen? Sugar Ray Leonard's not here no more. Boxing's going to die. And then here comes somebody else. It always happens. And
good point.
I think that somebody will come along, so maybe somebody in the amateurs right now, and with TV money getting involved, I think they're going to want to leave the amateur world and come into the pros.
Moving along, and before we go to our upcoming calendar, it was announced that a purse bid has been ordered by the WBO to face Sabrina Perez, the WBO bantamweight champion, against Amanda Serrano, the current WBO super bantamweight champion. The purse bid has been ordered for March 30th, which is today. Which actually, I don't even know who if I haven't seen anything yet of anybody winning the purse bid or anything. But the minimum acceptable bid for the bantamweight division is $10,000. The purse division being 65% for Amanda Serrano and 35% for Sabrina Perez, that seems highly, highly unfair. Because Sabrina Maribel Perez from Argentina is the champion, but they're giving Amanda Serrano the 65% because of her international recognition? Wow.
Yeah, probably because she went to Argentina and knocked out the girl.
You know what? That's another reason why I don't agree with a lot of the WBO's decisions when it comes to boxing and a lot of the decisions when it comes to female boxing, because one of the questions here, and not to knock Amanda Serrano or knock that team, because they're actually looking. We've had them here. They're friends of the shows. And her manager, Jordan, mentioned to us that, you know, the goal is for her to become a five-time world champion, if not a six-time world champion. So they're doing what they need to do to get that. But why would the WBO rank her so high in a weight division that she's never fought before, which is bantamweight, and order a purse bid in that division, basically saying she's the number one ranked fighter in that division, in a division she's never fought before? That's one thing. And two is, why give her the bigger piece of the pie of the purse bid division when the world champion is the Argentinian? I just think that's unfair, and I think it kind of puts a smudge into the female boxing world where they're not following the rules. So it kind of makes it seem like, hey, in female boxing, anything goes, which I don't agree with.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
I know that Amanda's fighting this month. Well, April, I should say.
Well, this is the fight. This is the fight that they're looking to make.
Well, actually, she's going to be fighting against Diana Santana.
Oh, okay. So I thought she was fighting for this. I thought this was the title that she was looking for then.
I think they couldn't agree upon that, but now she's going to be fighting Diana Santana.
So do you think that Diana Santana... I don't know. It's a little confusing because according to BoxRec, which obviously is not official, it says that she's going to be fighting for the vacant WBO bantamweight title, but according to the WBO, their champion is Sabrina Perez, this girl. And we just saw that a purse bid was ordered. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe we'll find out in the next couple of days or weeks. If by our next show we don't have an answer, let's try to see if we have Amanda or Jordan on here and they can explain it to us. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. We should have them on.
Okay. So
maybe the first bid is for Diana now. Maybe the champion team deal didn't go through. But let me
check it. But according to the website for the WBO, their champion is Sabrina Perez, who she won the title back in November 26th, the vacant WBO bantamweight title, with the unanimous decision over Alondra Garcia, who is now, believe it or not, the junior flyweight IBF champion. Can you believe that? So she went from 108 to 116 and fought for the bantamweight title against Sabrina Perez. She went the 10 rounds against the bantamweight and lost the bid for the WBO title. But now she's the junior flyweight champion for the IBF, Alondra Garcia, the Mexican. But according to whatever I'm seeing, unless they stripped her, the WBO champion is Sabrina Maribel Perez. And I don't see why they would strip her unless she refused to defend the title. So let's see if we could get some clarification from Jordan Maldonado, I believe this is his last name, and Amanda Serrano on our next show, which is scheduled for April 13th. Now, let's move on to our upcoming calendar. Starting on Friday, March 31st, which is this Friday, tomorrow, from the Parque Central in San Jose, Costa Rica, Yocasta Valle will be facing Yaritza Perez in a 10-rounder for the IBF 102-pound title, where on the same night, tomorrow night, from the Caribe Convention Center in Petitionville, Haiti, Melissa Saint-Ville will be defending her WBC silver title against Mexican Jessica Gonzalez in a 10-rounder. And I believe as well, I wasn't aware of this, but Alicia Ashley is also going to be fighting on the same card. And she's going to be facing, on BoxRec who Alicia Ashley is going to be fighting, but she's going to be fighting on that card, the former super bantamweight WBC champion Alicia Ashley of Jamaica, living in New York, is going to be also fighting on that Haitian card under the Melissa Saint-Ville versus Jessica Gonzalez, because I saw photos of the weigh-in, so she is going to be fighting there. Tomorrow night. Yeah, I just don't know who she's going to be fighting. Same thing tomorrow night from the Western Cape in South Africa. Alicia Graf is going to be facing a local Bukiwe Nonina in a 10-rounder for the vacant WBF World Boxing Federation bantamweight title. So Alicia Graf back in the mix. We know that she had fought in Australia, and now she's coming back in South Africa.
She's tough.
Yeah, she's a tough fighter. She's fighting Bukiwe Nonina. So let's see if by winning this bantamweight title, she kind of gets a little bit more in the mix and we get to see her against some of the bigger names of the division. Maybe even Amanda Serrano. I think that would be a really good fight. On Saturday,
that would be a good fight.
Yeah, Saturday, April 1st in Germany, Christina Hammer, a fighter that we have mentioned quite a lot tonight, will be facing Maria Lindberg, number 2 ranked by the WBC. And she will be defending her WBC and WBO middleweight titles in a 10-rounder. So this Saturday, we're going to see if Christina Hammer continues to be the WBC and WBO champion. What can you tell us about the first fight, David? And what can you tell us about Christina Hammer besides being a European fighter? By saying that, you're kind of giving me the impression that she's a stand-up kind of fighter, up and down. What are her strengths and what are her weaknesses?
Her strengths are she's a boxer. She's a boxer. She stands straight up. She likes to – her style is to move around, box, move around, and then don't allow the person to fight inside. Whenever the fight gets close, she holds. That's her thing. Mm. Box to the outside and then hold if they come inside. It's the usual European style. Maria Lindberg is from Sweden. They fought about 3-4 years ago, and that's Maria's only loss was to Christina Hammer. So this is basically a revenge match. And she hasn't lost since. So maybe she learned something, maybe not. Christina's a little taller. So that's going to help because she uses her height very well, like she did against Kelly Reese in her last fight.
Christina Hammer, originally from Kazakhstan. So that tells you a little bit about this woman who is 26 years old, making her home in Dortmund, Germany. And she, 20-0, 9 knockouts, and she has faced the best of the division, Yahaira Hernandez. She beat her. She beat Zita Satiko, who's ranked now number one at super middleweight by the WBC. Michaela Loren beat her. Beat Anna Sophie Mathis, who we saw go against Cecilia Breakhouse. Beat Kelly Reese twice. So she's no pushover. She's going to defend those titles. And then we're going to see if a fight against Clarissa Shields gets made. Do you think that there is enough to entice Christina Hammer to fight in the United States?
Oh, that's a good question. It depends on how much money she's making over there in Germany. Because the Germans do get paid well. But I don't know how well she gets paid over there. I mean, it wasn't good enough to keep Cecilia Breakus. So, and the fact that Cecilia's willing to come to the U.S., maybe the money is better here. We'll see if that's enough money to entice her to fight Clarissa Shields.
Well, this fight is going to be the semi-main event to the Marco Huck against Maurice Braden's vacant WBC cruiserweight championship or title, and it's going to be on a major German network. So I'm going to guess that she does pretty well over there. So we'll see. We'll see if Showtime has enough money to entice this woman to come over to the United States, or if we're going to have to see Clarissa Shields travel, which is something that she's not opposed to do. She did it for the Olympics. She went to London. She went to Rio. So I'm sure that for the world title opportunity, Clarissa Shields will get on a plane and fly over to Germany to face Christina Hammer.
That'll be something.
Now, in a historic, or what could be a historic fight card on Saturday night from the Zocalo, the main square of one of the biggest cities in the world, Mexico City, Promociones del Pueblo on Televisa gives us Mariana Juarez's challenge for her third world title in as many divisions against Catherine Fitti for the WBC bantamweight title. Mariana Juarez, our friend of the show, we've had her here, 112-pound champion, 115-pound champion, and now she's looking for a 118-pound title. If she does it, she will become the first Mexican female fighter to be a three-time world champion in as many divisions. You are convinced, David, that she's going to pull it off this Saturday night.
I'm not convinced. I mean, I've known Mariana for a long time, but it just depends on how well she's able to adapt to Catherine's movement and speed. Mariana, I mean, she always surprises people. So she surprises me still. And it's going to be an interesting fight. It's really a toss-up to me.
I'm a fan of Mariana Juarez. I've been for a long time. But I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I see this as a very, very tough fight for Mariana Juarez because of the way that we've seen her perform in the bantamweight division. Her first fight in the division at 118 pounds, she lost to Daniela Bermudez of Argentina. She didn't fare well. She didn't take those punches well. Her second fight against La Torbellina Garcia, she won, but I don't even think Torbellina Garcia is an actual natural bantamweight. And here against Catherine Fitti, she's going to be fighting a very strong, quick, aggressive fighter. I've had the opportunity to see Fitti win this world title, the WBC bantamweight title, and she basically dominated from the opening bell to the last bell because it went to a technical decision because of a bad cut. She dominated Jasmine Rivas, who was pretty much the toughest fighter in that division. We all know Jasmine Rivas. We saw her go 10 hard rounds at super bantamweight with Amanda Serrano. And to me, I was there. I saw Catherine Fitty completely dominate her. So I think this is a very tough fight for Mariana Juarez. And if she pulls it off, not only does she deserve it, but she becomes, in my eyes, one of the greatest female fighters that has ever lived, quite honestly.
Oh, yeah. She would deserve it, too. She's had some wars. That for the last two decades, she's been engaging in the most prolific wars in female boxing.
And now, as part of that free event at Mexico City, we're also going to see the defense of the first defense of Alejandra La Tigre Jimenez, the WBC heavyweight champion. She's going to be facing Carlette Uwa in a scheduled 10-rounder. We all know that Jimenez won that title over Martha Salazar, who was our guest on our last show, who unfortunately has retired from the sport. And this is going to be Alejandra's first defense of that WBC heavyweight title. That's going to be on that card as well. As well as Jasmine Gonzalez, the cousin of Johnny Gonzalez, she's going to be facing Sonia Osorio in a 6-rounder in the flyweight division. On Saturday, April 8th, from the Oasis Hotel in Cancun, Mexico, Profesores del Pueblo brings us again on Televisa another female fight. This time it will be highly ranked Yesenia La Niña Gomez going against Jackie Calvo in a 6-rounder at flyweight, whereas the same night, but at the Men Arena in Manchester, Nicola Adams, another Olympian from England, will be making her pro debut against Tiffany Beth Anderson, a to-be-announced opponent, in a 4-rounder at flyweight. And the next night, on Saturday, April 9th, from the Novo in Los Angeles, California, Ringstar Sports of Richard Schaefer gives us Marisela Cornejo, highly ranked super middleweight, facing undefeated Sydney LeBlanc in a 6-rounder at 168 pounds. David, you're going to be in the house for that fight. What can you tell me about that bout?
I don't really know much about Sydney LeBlanc. I do know that Marisela Cornejo has been working with Joel Diaz, and that can be a bad thing. Joel is one of the best trainers in the business. And Joel also trains Omar Figueroa, Diego De La Hoya. He's got a whole bunch of budding superstars. And Marisela will learn a lot under him.
Well, what I can tell you about Sydney LeBlanc quite quickly is that she's been a professional for 8 years. No, 6 years. She went pro in 2011. She fought Tiffany Woodward and scored a draw. She was 4-4. Tiffany Woodward was LeBlanc's pro debut. Then she fought again in 2011 against Teresa Boner and scored a unanimous decision. And then she fought once in 2012. She defeated Taryn Pennell with a unanimous decision. Then she fought once in 2013 against none other than Latasha Burden, scoring a unanimous decision. And then she fought the same year Tiffany Woodward again, beating her, and she has not fought since 2013. This is going to be her first fight in 4 years. So, undefeated, Sydney Ginger the Ninja LeBlanc, and we're going to be seeing her against Marisela Cornejo on April 9th at the Novo in Los Angeles, California. Ringstar Sports, or Richard Schaefer, is giving us that fight card. And like you said, she's been under the wing of Joel Diaz. So we're going to see if we see any differences in her fight game, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely going to see some differences.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of this 24th episode of the 2-Minute Round with Mr. David Avila and myself, Felipe León, here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. Your Hooks and Jazz look at the female fight world. We'll be back on April 13th. I'm sorry, November. That's a long time. April 13th. discussing all these fights, the results, looking towards the future of what the female fight world is going to bring us, and also any news that comes up. Hopefully, we'll have a special guest. Maybe we'll have Jordan Maldonado and Amanda Serrano again to tell us about what's going on with that WBO bantamweight title challenge. Who they're actually going to fight? Is it going to be Diana Santana, or is it going to be the actual champion? So we're going to see. We're going to see if we could get them on the horn here on the two-minute round. Before we go, remind you, patreon.com/leaveitinthering to support the network. Every Monday, the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Every Wednesday, we have the Leaving in the Ring show, the flagship show with David Duenas and myself. And then every other Thursday with our next show, April 13th, is this show, the two-minute round. Your hooks and jabs look with the hooks. Man, I'm getting all messed up. Your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world. David, anything else?
That should do it. I'm looking forward to that fight card in L.A. on the 9th.
Yeah, I think there's another girl actually scheduled to fight a lightweight, making her pro debut. So hopefully opponent has not been named yet. But you know what? I'm going to try to see if I can make that card. I'll let you know, and maybe we'll see each other there.
Great. Sounds good.
All right. So to everybody, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on April 13th. Good night.
Good night.